Chapter 44. I Summon the Banners. Lady Varen looked perplexed. It was an intriguing expression on an Alka, even one of these almost human varieties. Mage Lord, what you ask?
What I ask might save the kingdom before it is even 6 moons old, and more importantly, it might save tens of thousands of lives. Perhaps even Alka Allon lives, if there are any of your hidden treehouses in that neighbourhood, and certainly thousands of Talalon lives, if that holds any value to you. You may have heard of how the dead god's monstrosities treat the river folk. Kind of like a picnic.
It would require so much energy, she said, dazed.
I'd dazed an Alka. I'd never thought I'd see that happen. But I could tell she didn't have any material objection to the idea, so I pressed my points in a reasonable fashion. If you say the spell is not difficult, merely requiring lavish energy, then why cannot an entire army be thus transported? I asked excitedly. Or is that too much mass to be moved through the ether?
It has to do with resistance, she explained. I can pull myself through space, and even bring one or two people in ordinary circumstances, if I work through a pre-established transfer point.
But we have all of this snowstone, I pointed out. She nodded, as the possibilities began to form in her mind.
With snowstone, I could perhaps bring 5 or 6 others, if I had sufficient reserves. But more than that requires more energy, and the expenditure rises sharply with each additional person.
At least as I understand the theory, she admitted.
It is not my area of specialty.
But if energy was no limitation, then it would be theoretically possible, she agreed.
It has been done in the past, she admitted reluctantly, though at terrible cost.
Could you do it now, if I can provide the power? She sighed.
I can but try, Mage Lord. With my kinswomen helping, and perhaps a few more volunteers, we could move a small army.
Distance is not the issue, she said, before I could ask. Indeed, distance matters not at all. It takes the same energy to move a man across a room as it does to move him across a country.
And then there are other considerations, she added guiltily. Not all amongst the kindreds would see such a feat as a boon.
I paused. Politics. She nodded, looking a little ashamed.
There are those amongst the kindreds who see our interaction with the Humani as one long series of tragic mistakes, and there has been much pain and death, it is true. But since my folk welcomed yours, I feel as if both of our folk have prospered from the relation overall. But some clans do not wish to help the Humani at all, in any way. Some wish to advise and perhaps aid you in some small ways, and then there are those, like my fellow envoys, and I, who see aiding your people as much as we can as the best, most responsible course of action. Assisting you performing a feat like transporting an entire army?
She trailed off.
If you don't mind looking into it, Lady Varen, I said respectfully, I will see what kind of troops I can muster. Haste is of the utmost importance. I hope you understand. She sighed prettily, nodded, as if finding her resolve somewhere, and then faded away from sight. I don't know if she went back to her embassy or elsewhere, but it smelled like lilies after she left. It was my turn to sigh. I had the possibility of pushing an army through space, to cross hundreds of leagues in an instant and be precisely where I needed them the most. All I lacked now was an army. I had my mercenaries, of course, the stalwart infantry of the Black Boots I had retained to conquer Westphalia and the Nairodi. While the mounted archers had returned to Nairod, richer men, the infantry had elected to stick around for light winter garrison duty. I could convince them to make the trip, if I paid them well enough. There were perhaps other professional mercenaries, too, at Sindaria Port. But even if I hired every sellsword in town, that would still give me no more than 500 men. I could count on my Bovali for perhaps 500 more, most of them passing good archers.
There were plenty of survivors of Bovol who were eager to gain vengeance on the Gavanni, now that they had a secure homeland to return to and proper weapons in their hands, and to them I could add the 10 or 15 lances I could muster from the castle garrison. Then, as Sire Kay reminded me, I could call my own banners, summoning maybe another 50 lances among my 5 new provinces, probably less after the fighting. A lot of them had chosen to go into exile, and I wasn't certain I could rely on most of the others, but that still left me shy of 1,500 men. I was racking my brain for where I could get them when Pantandra reminded me that I was, still, a ducal marshal of Castal. The office was purely ceremonial now, a title to tack on the end of my name when I wanted to be an asshole. I had been appointed as a marshal by both Duke Lenguin of Alsha and Duke Rad of Castal for their respective duchies last year. While the warrant had been given for the Timberwatch campaign, the warrant was still valid. It had no expiration. I could legally call upon any vassal of the Duke of Castal for troops in order to defend the realm. Whether or not the local lords would pay attention to such a summons was another matter. If I started with the POW camp outside of the Dyke Tower, that would be a good base. There were still almost 500 men there, who had taken up arms for Gimbal's gold, but who had been too poor to pay their own ransoms. Most had intended to winter over in Sevendor, earning money at the harvest to buy their way free. The way our fields were bulging, the extra help would be well worth the money, and we could feed them. Offered the chance to fight instead of paying their ransoms, most of them jumped at it. There was my friend Baron Arathaniel of Sendaria, who could perhaps summon 30 or 40 lances or more at short notice, particularly since most of his men were already armed and deployed as occupation troops to his new fiefs. Perhaps more, if the price was right. Sire Sigilan was spread fairly thin, but he could spare a few lances, especially if I could pay them out of the ducal treasury. But beyond Sendaria, there were other lords I could coerce into sending troops on the basis of my warrant, theoretically. The barons of Bokeraton and Myseldor, both rivals of Arathaniel, were within 2 days' ride of Sevendor, and could be tapped for a few dozen lances apiece. The large barony across the river, Revenar, could be shaken down for another 50 lances, my aides informed me, and even Sashtalia, our less than friendly neighbour to the northeast, could be forced to provide troops. For that matter, Vulric, the Baron of Flaria, could be summoned for another few dozens. He probably wouldn't dignify the banner call with a response, and I had no way to compel him. But I could ask, couldn't I? How many could I bring to muster? There was no way to predict that. All I could do was call them and see who showed up. Trying to get troops off-season in a feudal society is never easy, and trying to get them at harvest was going to be even harder. But the penalty for ignoring or refusing a lawful summons by a marshal of the realm was forfeiture of lands, or it was before there was a king. Since Rad was still Duke of Castal, as well as King of Castalshah, he would be likely to enforce that pretty thoroughly, I was guessing. I sighed and called for a page. A young girl of 9 or 10 who I didn't recognize arrived, her hair neatly combed and her green and white snowflake tabard looking spotless. "Bring me parchment and ink," I requested, "and have Sire Kay, Sir Roncil, Sir... just have all the sirs meet me downstairs in an hour for a war council, and the High Magi. Also, have the stables prepare several riders for messages, at least a dozen. Swift riders," I emphasized. The girl nodded solemnly, repeated back my orders, and scurried away. This wasn't going to be easy. At least that was the consensus of the makeshift war council I'd put together. "You want us to do what?" Sire Kay asked, looking confused. "The war is over, Mage Lord," he reminded me. "Not for here," I explained patiently, "but for deployment against the goblins in Gilmora. I want you to call our banners, mobilize our troops, send out the summons. The Duke is calling upon his loyal vassals for military service in defense of the realm."
"That's going to be unpopular,"
Sir Roncil said, rubbing his chin doubtfully.
"Most of the men in your new domains just got home."
"I need as many as can be spared," I insisted.
"Oh, dear
goddess! Are we invading East Flaria now? Groaned Tyndall. My council of war included pretty much everyone I could trust, arcane and mundane, who was in a position of authority, including three of my yeomen and two of my apprentices. No, we're invading Gilmora, I snapped, and we're going in force. By my authority as Marshal of the Duchy of Castile, I hereby summon all able-bodied warriors to answer the Duke's call, I said formally. There was a gasp or two.
That's not going to be very popular, Sir Ronsel pointed out.
He'd been preparing to make his move to Northwood as its new lord and getting ready to officially begin negotiations for his new bride. He did not look very enthusiastic about the idea of going to war himself.
That's not my problem, I shot back.
I've been tasked with saving Barrowbell and halting the invasion of Gilmora. If the troops of the Eastern Bontal Vales are all I have to count upon, then that is who will go. But I think I can spare you a long, boring march. I briefly explained the manner of their transport to everyone, and was met with disbelieving stares and slack jaws.
Really? This is the only way,
I assured them. Rad is already mobilizing everyone he can around the central and western riverlands. There simply are no more troops to be had near to Gilmora. But I think we can pull enough together here in Sevendor to make a difference. The troops we bring will be fresh to fight, I reminded them, and accompanied by a few mage knights, war magi, and a mage lord or two. This is not intended to be a suicide mission.
They rarely are, Sir Ronsel quipped dryly.
I can mobilize maybe 500 in Sevendor, mostly infantry, Sire Kay said resolutely. I had called him away from his maiden moon, but he was ready to fight, as well as a dozen lances.
A dozen?
That was news to me. We had horses to spare, and archers and infantry aplenty, but I doubted we had the men who knew how to ride a horse to war.
A dozen complete lances?
I've taken a few landless knights into service in your absence, Mage Lord, he said apologetically. It was clear that we needed a stronger cavalry force, and more professional officers for Sevendor's defense. There were plenty of men available after the siege who were willing to take our service, so I took them in. I've quartered them with the garrison troops at Brestal Vale, where they have been working with the militia.
I wasn't criticizing, I said. I just wasn't aware.
Can we afford them? Hiring a landless knight as a retainer usually ran to 20 ounces of gold a year. Half that, if you provided him armor and horse.
We have the funds, Mage Lord, Sire Kay murmured, and you are free to inspect the accounts.
In all my free time. That's why I hired you. If you say we need them, we need them. And right now, we need them. Have them prepared for battle in the field, and have as many volunteers of the Bovali who wish to be included prepare as well.
Mage Lord, if we take the bulk of our forces away through this means, who is left to defend our lands?
Sayake asked, with all the concern of a new-made landed lord.
We shall be taking the bulk of our enemies with us as well, I pointed out.
I will not leave Sevendor unguarded, nor do I ask that any lord deprive his domain of basic protection. Hopefully, after the spanking we just gave West Flaria, others will be more reluctant to try their luck. That seemed to mollify Sire Kay, which just meant he'd wait until we were alone before he peppered me with questions. I didn't mind the criticism, usually, but I appreciated him not bringing it out in council. Sire Kay is the kind of castellan who backs his lord utterly, and if that means putting himself in an unpopular position to support him, he was more than willing to do that.
So, we're just going to pop in like a bunch of tree folk in a fairy tale?
Rondal asked, looking skeptical.
Master, I know you did as much in Bovol and saved all of our lives, but we have no Mullapar, he pointed out.
The aberration in space and time that lurked under Bovol Castle had been instrumental in rescuing the Bovali from siege.
That's right. We don't,
I agreed. But we do have the active assistance of the Alka'alon, who have assured me that the process is completely harmless and certainly attainable. We also have far more Irionite to work with this time, and the effect of Snowstone cannot be forgotten. We won't be alone, either. Just before this meeting, I received word from Master Taran, the High Mage in charge of artifacts,
that several mercenary troops recently released from their long-term assignments are finding it hard to find work in Wenshaw. He's agreed to hire them and start sending them downriver to us. They can be in Sevendor in 4 days, with a little help from the Magical Corps. That should give us 500 or 1,000 more seasoned warriors. Telamon doesn't have much time at Cambrian. Barobel doesn't have much time. But if Barobel falls, so does the quickest and safest route from east to west across Gilmora. Without that, we will lose most of Alshar and perhaps a healthy chunk of Castal. So, I've set the date of departure for 6 days from today, at noon. You have 6 days to mobilize every sword you can across the land and see them delivered here. You have 6 days to finalize your affairs and take up your own arms.
That isn't enough time to raise a decent force,
Sir Ferrando insisted. Even in Sevendor, that will only give us a...
It will give us plenty of time,
Sayake interrupted. You heard the Mage Lord. He has given you honorable orders in the name of the Duke. See to them, he insisted. That didn't make Ferrando, or anyone else, any happier. But you don't contradict Sayake when he talks to you like that without a powerfully compelling reason. Time to bring up the one piece of good news. If it makes you feel better, everyone who survives will get double pay at the Crown's expense, I offered. It isn't much, but it's what I'm empowered to do on behalf of the Crown.
That will be helpful for anyone who survives, agreed Sir Ronsel glumly. Not to bring up a sensitive subject, Mage Lord, but will these river lords pay attention to a summons from you? You're an outlander and a mage to them, regardless of who you are at court.
We'll find out, I said sternly, but I want messengers dispatched to every barony and independent domain within 2 days' riding distance, relaying my summons, and I want them to keep track of just who was prompt and who was reluctant, and who was defiant. Bannermore wasn't happy with the proposed deployment either, because it interfered with the closing of the magical fair. But it also gave me a chance to appeal directly to the unaugmented war magi who had attended in search of a witchstone. Most were already intrigued in just being involved in an Alcan spell, but once I pointed out that Gavani meant Gavani shamans, and that meant a chance at a witchstone, I suddenly had 20 of seasoned, registered war magi who were willing to walk into the fiercest battle of their lives. I made a similar appeal to the non-war magi, asking for their enlistment as support troops, with only mild response. Only 10 or 11 were willing to sign up for military duty voluntarily, no matter what the bounty I was paying. But that was enough to ensure my war magi wouldn't be doing double duty as magical support, and some of those civilian magi could be deadly in battle, as Sire Dunsellan had proven. After that, all I could do was coordinate with everyone and wait for the troops to arrive. Telamon was optimistic about the plan, if hesitant about trusting the tree folk. At that point, of course, if I told him I was heading toward him with a half-dozen half-blind dotards leaning on their spears, he would have been optimistic. His watchers searched the skies constantly, looking for dragon wings. Luckily, the beasts were either deployed elsewhere, or so difficult to control that using them wasn't easy. I was hoping for the latter. While we waited, I had Dara practice for hours with the thoughtful knife. That earned her a spat with her own bird, who resented the attention she was giving the device. But the girl had a definite facility with the weapon. Her father was understandably reluctant for her to accompany me, but agreed to allow his daughter into the battle. Since he was going with 2 of her brothers and 2 of her uncles, he figured he could keep an eye on her. Once I demonstrated how helpful she was with the knife, he understood. Which was good, because right now the thoughtful knife was the only trick I had prepared against dragons. The first troops from the domains closest to Sevendor arrived about the same time as the magical fair reached its anticlimactic finish. We quietly encamped them in front of the Dyketar, where we had turned our POW camp into a staging area. Those first vassal troops proved to be Sir Festeran and his father, who were proudly leading the 8 lances that were Hosley's contribution. On paper, they should be able to deliver 9 or 10, but most lords kept back enough men to guard their lands and manage the harvest. Sire Fetelin seemed determined to be a model vassal. Other troops began to trickle in. My own new vassals were first, of course,
with the Lord of Bastador bringing 5 lances, the Lords of Kerendol and Husandor sending 6 apiece, but not fighting themselves. I had to send Sir Roncil to his new land with a sack of gold to coax his banners out, but he returned from Northwood 3 days later, at the head of 4 lances and 50 archers, eager for double pay. Sire Arathaniel arrived soon after that, leading a full 61 lances and 100 additional infantry. Apparently when he'd summoned his banners earlier in the month for the hurried invasion of East Flaria, word had not reached the more far-flung of his estates to respond as quickly. Therefore, when he had returned to Chepstone Castle, he found a small army of men eager for battle, mobilized, and fresh to the field. Adding those fresh troops to those men already deployed in occupation of his new conquests, he had managed to fill my request, and then some. Sir Sigilan of Trestendor sent but 3 lances and 20 archers, but by mutual agreement, Arathaniel and I named him steward over the captured estates in our stead. If anyone risked rebellion while we were deployed, I could count on Sigilan to squash it. The stout-hearted castellan Sir Olsted would lead the Trestendori. Our recent enemies were less forthcoming. Lord Trefalan had not believed I was an actual marshal until a messenger from Baron Arathaniel confirmed it. Even then, Sestalia only grudgingly sent 20 lances from a possible muster of 80, just enough to fulfill their obligation. They were clearly the worst 20 lances, too, and made up mostly of his political enemies within his domain. That was fine by us. We ended up re-equipping about half of them, which made them enormously well-disposed to the Seven Dori, regardless of the circumstances. The barons of Maiseldor and Bokeraton sent 60 and 75 lances, respectively, and even the barony of Revenar, across the Bontal, responded with a healthy 40 lances and 2 40-man troops of archers. What surprised me most was the response of Baron Volric. I had counted on him for 20 lances at most, grudgingly given and of poor quality. In fact, he sent me twice that number, which I found to be generous, until I saw who led them. Sire Gimbal, looking daggers at me, was the officer who dutifully reported in to Sire Kay. Most of the East Flarians who had gone into exile with him were likewise mustered. As much as I disliked the man, I almost felt sorry for him. Perhaps he could purge his reputation in battle. Stranger things had happened. The Remeran mercenaries arrived just 12 hours late, which was almost punctual for army time. They were a mixed bag, 2 regular units of 500 each, long used to easy garrison duty, and 1 unit of hardened infantry who had just completed a successful assault on a castle in Remeria. I didn't know what Taran promised them, but they seemed almost gleeful when they arrived. Surprisingly, Taran himself had come downriver with them, along with 5 other High Magi who had been in Wenshar at the former Censorate Citadel. "Just thought you might need them," he explained. "They're war magi who have been reading books all summer. They want to stretch a little, perhaps experiment with some of what they've learned." "I won't say no," I agreed. "I have 25 High Magi and 3 Elka Alon here. I'm hoping that will be enough to send everyone, but every bit helps." As the appointed day got closer, the dispatches from Cambrian got more dire. The few reinforcements who had been able to redeploy from the Penumbra and arrive to help had faced such overwhelming odds that they hadn't even tried to relieve the siege yet. While the men inside the castle were well-fed and doer-handed, they were grim about their chances. Meanwhile, Sevendor village and the commons filled up with friend and foe alike. Keeping order became essential as various factions with long histories of feuding clashed. I had to send Tyndall, Kay, and Planus down to help sort things out. Keeping everyone fed was another chore, and not for the first time I praised the gods for Olmeg the Green. I could build the royal treasury for reimbursement later, but for now I was just happy that we had enough food and fodder on hand to keep my little army fed. The Alka and I had been working closely together, along with Pentandra and Taran, to translate the basic transport spell from the Alka Alon's elegantly difficult magic system to the more basic Imperial system we humans use to best effect. Even then, Penny and Taran had to learn some spells on the fly to understand how to work the thing.
"It's a lot more complicated than they let on, Min," Penny said when she stopped by my lab one night, long past midnight. You aren't so much transporting someone as moving the rest of the universe around them, or something like that. Honestly, some of those translations look funny, she admitted.
I don't care if it's Pigeon Gavani. Will it work?
I think so, Penny said quietly. If we can raise enough energy, and if we can direct it properly, then it is quite possible that it might work.
Quite possible that it might work.
This is my first spell of this kind, she reminded me. Give me a little grace.
This is my ass about to go into battle and possibly die gloriously, and that's a best-case scenario if the spell actually works. Worst case?
Worst case? You just don't come back out. You stay in a neutral state of being for eternity, or just don't go in the first place. I'm not fully certain which.
Well, can you test it?
Set for tomorrow morning, she agreed. I'm sending Sarakim through.
Sarakim? She shrugged.
If you can think of a more expendable high mage?
Sarakim often was indeed that obnoxious.
Good point.
So how will you know if he made it?
Mind to mind, remember?
She said, as if I was the village idiot.
As soon as he gets there, he should be able to let us know.
Right, right, I said apologetically. Sorry, not much sleep.
You aren't the only one. Lady Varen is planning on establishing 3 different transports, using 3 old Alcan transfer points. She says she can handle them better in smaller groups like that, even with Snowstone. And that way the High Magi can help, right up to the point where they vanish.
Good idea, I agreed, although I'd discussed it with Lady Varen earlier that week. That way we can put the cavalry in the furthest position, the infantry in the nearest. Then they can show up at the same time.
That was our thinking, she nodded. I'm no soldier, but I've always heard that surrounding your enemy was wise. This way you will have forces entering from the north, the southeast, and the southwest.
She paused as she poured another glass of wine.
How is Alia taking it?
Honestly? I asked, surprised. She told me that she didn't mind the war or the spell as much, as long as I didn't have to sleep with my ex-girlfriend again to save the day. She giggled garishly.
That's hysterical. I thought about that, actually, but with this many high magi around to power the spell, we shouldn't need to go to those extremes. But imagine if we did,
she said, her pretty dark eyes going dreamy. Penny's biggest professional aspiration was to use a full-blown magical orgy to fuel a really big spell. Only there weren't enough people who knew the esoteric realm of sex magic in the world to fulfill her vision.
She's serious.
She doesn't exactly see you as a threat anymore, since our wedding, but she does still see you as her rival.
That's comforting, in a strange way. How is she, really?
She's pissed as 9 hells I'm leaving her for the 3rd time in a year, and this time to go to war. She keeps making jokes about being a widow, I said glumly.
Don't worry about it. She's just nervous, Penny said. She's got the baby to occupy her time, now that she doesn't have to worry about invasion. And my godson is adorable. I don't know how you do it with your face, but you do make cute babies.
She got a hint of a guilty expression that I found highly interesting. Then you'll be thrilled to know that Alia thinks she's pregnant again. I sighed. She was throwing up a bit and missed her moon twice now. She told me last night, after I told her I was going back to the war. I haven't confirmed it yet, but she's pretty sure.
Oh, Minolan, congratulations,
she said, sincerely, her eyes wide.
How come I missed that?
How come I missed that? I complained wearily. I've been so busy with the invasion and the fair and the occupation and now this war that I slept next to her nearly every night and not noticed. How does a mage lord do that? How does a husband do that?
We've been busy, she shrugged, or at least I have, and I've been making you look busy. Min, don't be hard on yourself about this. Women like to keep that sort of thing private until they're sure.
Well, thanks, I said tiredly. Actually, I'm thrilled that Minalion will have a little brother or sister. Another one, I said to myself, and so is Alia. But I'm far less thrilled that he or she might grow up without a father.
Don't worry about that, Min,
Pentandra said, clearing the dregs of her wine cup.
Alia's pretty, and she's a noble woman now with a prosperous domain.
She won't have any trouble at all finding them a new father if you get yourself killed. Penny always knows just what to say.